Several exchanges in the industry fuel bubbles for a quick buck as well. If something starts to get momentum, including meme coins like Doge or Shiba that don't realistically have a substantial future, they promote those coins to their users, which can suck retail investors into buying the bubble top. Plus, a lot of YouTube and TikTok influencers pump small coins and use their audience as exit liquidity. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know, and we have got a great one today. We've got Lynn Alden back in the house. We've got a piece from her newsletter, a post-mortem on the crypto crash with everything that happened with Luna and Terra, where she's actually referencing pieces that she wrote earlier about it, like going into what the potential risks of that platform are as it was kind of blowing up in the space. And it's kind of hilarious. I mean, sad, but also a little bit funny how everything played out and how the risks that everybody was saying were in fact really big risks did in fact happen exactly like it was explained. Now, I don't have a lot of time, or I didn't have a lot of time for commentary, but I actually ended up did kind of ranting a little bit here at the end. It's really hard not to. I have a problem, but I'm trying to stay on top of this. I'm working on a ton of audiobooks right now, and we're trying to get ready for whenever the heck our kid is going to pop out and join us. Lots of fun, exciting stuff over here, and still just trying to get out some Bitcoin reads and some Bitcoin episodes for you guys. Cover what's going on, because honestly there is some really, really exciting shit happening right now, and I don't know what it is, but I get really kind of hyped about bear markets because the noise falls away, you know, like you get drowned out with just nonsense and you have to do stuff like talking about, like, just like try to explain to people why Terra is a bad idea or why UST might not work, and you just get caught in all this. It just kind of sucks sometimes. Like, bull markets are great in a lot of ways, but they suck sometimes too. And it's really nice to have the signal. And that's what happens when you clean out, as this Lynn Alden actually has a really good analogy in this piece about, like, you know, cleaning out the fat. You have to have a recession. You have to have a cool down period, so to speak. So I'm not gonna lead too much. Let's just go ahead and get into this piece. And read to this amazing piece from Lynn Alden's blog. Really quick, a thank you to our sponsors that make this show happen. It's the BitBox hardware wallet. Keep my Bitcoin safe, all my multi-sig, and I got my fancy little cases. I like it. It's a great wallet. You can get 5% off with Guy, G-U-Y, guyswan.com/BitBox. In fact, you can find all my sponsors like Swan Bitcoin, the best place to stack every single day, week, month, whatever the heck you want, and Swan Private, the concierge service, everything you want to learn, and the best access to the best team of Bitcoiners out there. You can find all these at swanbitcoin.com/guy, but guyswan.com/sponsors. And then, of course, you get 20% off with my Fold discount code. The Fold card is how you get sats back on everything in your life. All your bills, you get sat. You stack sats with every single one of them. It's amazing. Links to all of them in the show notes. And with that, let's get into Lynn Alden's amazing piece from her newsletter, and it's titled Digital Alchemy, A Postmortem of the Crypto Crash, by Lynn Alden. Throughout history, people have attempted to create something from nothing. On one hand, there are real scientific innovations, new developments that allow us to tap into denser energy sources and increase productivity to improve most people's quality of life. They create something from nothing only in the sense that they make resources go a lot further than they used to and make it easier to access more resources. They organize matter information, and human activity better than prior innovations. In other words, if you were to show a caveman a smartphone, he'd think of it as magic. On the other hand, there are attempts at things like alchemy and perpetual motion machines, approaches that misunderstand science. Even someone as famously smart as Isaac Newton spent quite a bit of time studying alchemy. It's an easy trap to fall into. Large swaths of the cryptocurrency market are basically the modern version of alchemy. While there are real innovations in the space, such as Bitcoin, fiat collateralized stablecoins, and a number of experimental technologies, there is also a huge amount of speculation, pump-and-dump schemes, technological claims that obfuscate the trade-offs and risks they're taking, and so forth. This article is a post-mortem analysis of the multi-billion dollar failure of Terra, which is a cryptocurrency network based around an algorithmic stablecoin. Riding the coattails of Bitcoin. Quote, "Before starting at the SEC, I had the honor of researching, writing, and teaching about the intersection of finance and technology at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. This included courses on crypto finance, blockchain technology, and money. In that work, I came to believe that though there was a lot of hype masquerading as reality in the crypto field, Nakamoto's innovation is real. Further, it has been and could continue to be a catalyst for change in the fields of finance and money. At its core, Nakamoto was trying to create a private form of money with no central intermediary, such as a central bank or commercial banks." Gary Gensler, SEC Chairman, August 2021. Local payments have historically been a private and physical process. I hand you physical cash and you hand me the goods. It's hard to surveil or prevent that type of transaction. But for years, people relied on large, centralized intermediaries, commercial banks, and central banks, if they needed to send payments further distances. If I wanted to send money to my friend in Chicago, or especially to my other friend in Tokyo, or buy something from a merchant in those cities, I needed to go through a big bank. In one of various ways, I would tell my bank to send their bank money, and if it goes internationally, it would ultimately involve our country's central banks, too. As an American, and for those types of destinations, going through centralized entities for long-distance payments has not been a big deal, because they don't block my payments. They are expensive and slow, though. But for the majority of people in the world, with restrictive monetary regimes and persistently high inflation, over half the world lives in an environment of authoritarianism and/or recurring double-digit inflation, the lack of alternatives has been restrictive. For developed market journalists and academics and analysts to not realize this is a form of privilege that many of them are unaware of. The invention of Bitcoin changed this reliance on centralized intermediaries, because it brought the first credible type of self-custodial, peer-to-peer money. Anyone with an internet connection could send liquid value to anyone else in the world with an internet connection, without relying on commercial banks or central banks. Nobody has to hold their money for them, and they don't have to ask permission from any centralized entity to send that value to someone else. I explored this concept in my article, What is Money Anyway? It's perhaps unsurprising, then, that 19 out of 20 of the leading countries in the Chainalysis Crypto Adoption Index are developing countries. In general, people in these countries deal with lower levels of property rights, lower levels of financial freedom, and higher levels of currency inflation than most readers of this article do. Now read the Chainalysis adoption chart from top to bottom, starting with the highest index. Vietnam, India, Pakistan, Ukraine, Kenya, Nigeria, Venezuela, United States, Togo, Argentina, Colombia, Thailand, China, Brazil, Philippines, South Africa, Ghana, Russian Federation, Tanzania, and Afghanistan. Bitcoin became the fastest asset in history to touch a $1 trillion market capitalization and has recovered from 3 greater than 80% crashes and several greater than 50% crashes to keep reaching new highs. Bitcoin holders have to put up with volatility, technical risk, and other things like that, but what was offered in a technical sense is truly new, regardless of what ultimately happens with the network in the long run. The protocol uses energy and open source code to establish a publicly auditable global consensus ledger, rather than relying on human decisions to come to that consensus. But after Bitcoin came 20,000 imitations. Some of them increase node requirements and therefore sacrifice decentralization to increase transaction throughput, thus defeating the purpose of a blockchain. Some of them take out the energy input and replace it with a human governance input, which again reduces decentralization in various ways. Some of them take on additional complexity in order to achieve more code expressivity, which also increases node requirements and reduces their decentralization. Basically, there's a theme here. It's decentralization that keeps getting thrown under the bus with each new innovation from competing projects. Satoshi Nakamoto purposefully sacrificed most metrics in his Bitcoin design in order to achieve an automated, decentralized, and auditable global transfer agent and registrar, and nothing else. He combined existing technologies like Merkle trees and proof-of-work algorithms, and then added difficulty adjustments to the mix, and this combination was his innovation. Quote, "Proof-of-work is not only useful, but absolutely essential. Trustless digital money can't work without it. You always need an anchor to the physical realm. Without this anchor, a truthful history that is self-evident is impossible. Energy is the only anchor we have. Proof of work equals trust physics to determine what happened. Proof of stake equals trust humans to determine what happened." Gigi, author of 21 Lessons. Bitcoin has been updated by developers via soft forks, backward-compatible opt-in upgrades, a number of times since then, but the core design remains unchanged. It's had 99.98% uptime since inception, and 100% uptime since March 2013. Not even Fedwire, the U.S. Federal Reserve's interbank settlement system, has had 100% uptime during that period. Most other cryptocurrency designs claw back some of that decentralization, reliability, and security to add back more features and then advertise this to investors as innovation. And around the margins, there are indeed some innovations. For example, a federated database and computation layer can be a useful thing. But for the most part, the space is filled with misunderstandings of what it is that Nakamoto created and why. These trade-offs are rarely advertised to investors and sometimes not understood by the founders, but rather are marketed as though they are pure technological improvements. And that advertising draws a lot of people in, especially when combined with VC-funded temporary economic incentives. Unlike the Bitcoin network, which has no central organization to market for it, most of these other projects have central foundations or persons that play a critical role in the marketing and ongoing operation of the network. People working in the Bitcoin ecosystem have often been critical of these other protocols. From an outside perspective, the whole crypto ecosystem may seem homogeneous, but within the industry, it's not really that way. People working on these, quote, altcoins, as they are called, have a natural incentive to try to associate with Bitcoin, but to market various reasons why their token is better, while Bitcoin proponents have a natural incentive to point out all of the risks and trade-offs that these other cryptocurrencies are making when they're claiming to be innovative. Meme. Are you two friends? Crypto. Yes. Bitcoin. No. Satoshi Nakamoto put out the open source software, updated it for a couple of years in the beginning, never gave himself a pre-mined amount of bitcoins, never spent any of his mined bitcoins, and then disappeared to let others carry forward his project. The network has relied on a rolling set of open source developers ever since, with no leader. There's nobody who can push updates onto users. There's nobody to turn to when the price goes down and ask what they're going to do about it. Bitcoin never raised capital, doesn't pass the Howey test, and therefore is not a security. It's categorized as a digital commodity for most purposes. In contrast, many other protocol developers have gotten rich off of their creations by giving themselves significant pre-mined coins and continue to operate their networks in a centralized way, while marketing them as being decentralized. Many of these coins or organizations raised capital, passed the Howey test, and therefore have many characteristics of securities. If they were fully honest with their designs, they would be like startup companies, and we could analyze them as such. But in a practical sense, many of them are basically unregistered securities, operating in a global gray zone before regulators figure out how to catch up, while advertising themselves as being decentralized networks. That's not to say that all crypto is bad or without technological contributions, but it is to say that the overall industry is quite full of scams, frauds, and well-meaning but ultimately doomed projects as a percentage of what has been created. Bitcoin left a big wake in its path, and sharks have been happy to fill that wake and figure out how to make a lot of money quickly. For the most part, it's like Bitcoin is the iPhone of this industry, and then there are thousands of cheap knockoff buggy phones with Apple logos glued onto them being marketed to people as well. Investors need to be very cautious if they choose to speculate in various crypto projects. Several exchanges in the industry fuel bubbles for a quick buck as well. If something starts to get momentum, including meme coins like Doge or Shiba, that don't realistically have a substantial future, they promote those coins to their users, which can suck retail investors into buying the bubble top. Plus, a lot of YouTube and TikTok influencers pump small coins and use their audience as exit liquidity. Terra, the central bank that wasn't. Terra is a cryptocurrency network based around an algorithmic stablecoin called Terra USD, or UST, and uses its native token, Luna, as basically its equity capital. A create and destroy mechanistic relationship between the two is what is meant to keep the peg stable. It marketed itself as being decentralized, but ultimately it was not. At its peak, Luna had a $40 billion market capitalization, and Terra USD had a nearly $20 billion market capitalization. It was heavily invested in by crypto VCs and retail investors. Much of this is now wiped out. The Terra USD peg broke, and Luna equity was eviscerated. This happened from May 7th to May 12th primarily, and is still an ongoing saga. When the Terra ecosystem was small, I mostly ignored it. I keep an eye on various crypto projects once they reach the top 20 by market capitalization or so, to have an idea of what they are doing, but can only keep track of so many things. By mid-March 2022, the Luna Foundation Guard was created to try to shore up the Terra Luna ecosystem, and they began purchasing Bitcoin, which was intended to serve as another line of defense for Luna's token equity. That's when I started to dig deeper into their ecosystem to analyze the risk. For months, a number of people in the Bitcoin ecosystem were warning about Terra. Industry professionals like Brad Mills, Nick Carter of Castle Island Ventures, Corey Clipston of Swan Bitcoin, and many more people than I can name here were publicly critical of it. Corey Clipston in particular was loudly and repeatedly warning people about it. I analyzed the situation, read several of the critical views of the project, and then went and read counterarguments from the Luna Bulls about why these risks were supposedly unfounded. And my view was that the risks were pretty clear and accurate. It's not really a technical risk, it's an economic risk based on an unstable economic design and unsustainable financial incentives. Rather than rewrite my full analysis, I'll share what I wrote with my research subscribers on April 3rd, 2022. Quote, Luna Defense Guard Bitcoin Accumulation. Some of this recent Bitcoin breakout was probably due to over $1.3 billion worth of Bitcoin purchases by the Luna Foundation Guard, which plans to buy $3 billion in Bitcoin for reserves and to eventually increase that reserve to over $10 billion. I'll rewind a bit and explain what the heck that means. Terra is a proof-of-stake smart contract cryptocurrency based around algorithmic stablecoins, and particularly around Terra USD or UST, which is their dollar stablecoin. Unlike USDT or USDC, which are custodial stablecoins where centralized entities hold fiat dollars as assets and issue redeemable stablecoin tokens representing those assets, UST is an algorithmic stablecoin. This means that it approximates the value of a US dollar, but does not hold US dollars. The way this works is that Terra's primary token, Luna, serves as the volatility offset for UST. If UST goes above $1, there's an arbitrage opportunity to burn Luna and create more UST. If UST goes below $1, there is an arbitrage opportunity to create Luna and burn UST. UST is supposed to remain around $1, while Luna is allowed to be volatile. The more demand there is for UST over time, the higher UST and Luna market cap should go. It's like a central bank that tries to incentivize market participants to do both sides of open market operations. However, if Luna's price does not keep pace with UST market cap expansion, then UST can become less and less backed by Luna over time. That's a general trend we've been seeing since late 2021 when UST demand started to take off. At this time, it's still over 200% backed, but declining fast. Terra is now the second biggest ecosystem in DeFi based on total value locked. The catch? Well, the huge demand for UST is almost entirely driven by unsustainably high yield farming opportunities, much like other DeFi ecosystems. Investors have been able to earn nearly 20% yields on UST in Terra's Anchor protocol due to various arbitrage opportunities, and that looks like it is starting to dry up. If that VC-supported yield opportunity dries up, UST demand will likely decline. If UST demand shrinks, it could cause a negative feedback loop and liquidity problems for both UST and Luna, also known as a death spiral, where tons of capital pulls out of the Terra ecosystem, which crashes the price of Luna and then eventually breaks the UST peg. If that occurs, it's functionally very similar to an emerging market currency crisis. Unlike Bitcoin, which has no centralized foundation for it, most smart contract blockchains have specific for-profit or non-profit organizations that serve as their central promotion and development hubs. Terra has Terraform Labs, Solana has the Solana Foundation, Ethereum has the Ethereum Foundation, Avalanche has Ava Labs. These are generally founder and VC-supported entities, with specific leaders and employees trying to promote and develop their ecosystems. And they often use token pre-mines as starter capital. Terraform Labs and other parties raised capital to set up the Luna Foundation Guard, which will act as a second layer of defense for the UST-US dollar algorithmic peg, rather than that peg relying entirely on Luna, as they describe it. Quote, in connection with its stewardship and support of the Terra ecosystem in general, LFG is establishing a decentralized UST reserve protocol, a nonprofit initiative to provide a further layer of support to ensure that UST maintains its peg. In an event where the market price of UST materially deviates from the USD peg, holders of UST will be able to close the arbitrage and bring the market price of UST back to the peg by swapping UST for major, non-correlated assets like Bitcoin that capitalize the reserve. The reserve functions as a release valve for swelling pressure to exit UST to Luna on-chain, dampening the reflexivity of the system by reducing the dilution of the Luna supply during severe contractions, and restoring the peg in real time and maintaining an alternative arbitrage opportunity outside of the Terra protocol itself. Luna Foundation Guard. One way to think of this is that it's similar to a country's sovereign reserve. During good times, an emerging market can use accumulated trade surpluses or currency sales to increase its reserves of foreign assets, such as gold or dollars or euros. Then, if the country later experiences a recession and currency crisis, it can defend the value of its currency by selling some of those reserves that it previously stockpiled, and using the proceeds of those sales to buy back some of its currency units from those that are selling it. On one hand, Terra buying a lot of Bitcoin is bullish for Bitcoin, at first. LFG could have bought USDC or USDT as reserves. They could have bought Ethereum as reserves. They could have bought a mix of these assets as reserves. But instead, they bought Bitcoin as reserves, having judged that to be the best one for the purpose of holding perpetual, decentralized, pristine collateral with minimal counterparty risk. This further validates the argument that Bitcoin is the best digital reserve asset. And now, the bigger the Terra ecosystem gets, the more demand they expect to have for their Bitcoin reserve. Eventually, as they expand onto other platforms, they intend to add small amounts of other tokens as reserves. For example, to the extent that they expand usage of UST into Solana's ecosystem, they expect to bring some SOL into their reserves. Their stated expectation is to have Bitcoin to be the primary reserve asset along with Luna and smaller allocations to other tokens. On the other hand, this presents a future risk for the Bitcoin price. If Terra encounters a problem and is forced to sell a lot of Bitcoin to defend its UST peg, it will be detrimental to price in a similar way that their current buying is favorable to the price. Terra's unsustainable anchor protocol with 20% yields results in a lot of UST demand, and with this new reserve practice by Terra, UST demand now results in Bitcoin demand. This can be thought of as a source of indirect, artificial, or unsustainable Bitcoin demand, which should eventually dry up. Active Bitcoin traders should keep an eye on Terra's Luna and Bitcoin reserves relative to UST market capitalization, because if it starts to break down and they are forced to defend the UST peg, we could see tens of thousands of coins worth of rapid BTC selling pressure. I'm not saying that will happen, but it's a new factor to monitor going forward. End quote. Lynn Alden on April 3rd, 2022. I then continued to monitor it with increasing levels of risk assessment. Here was the segment in my May 1st report. Quote, Luna note. Okay, let's pause right here, let go of our sad little Luna bag for a second, and talk about securing our Bitcoin. As Lynn calls, the only investable asset in the space. I agree, Lynn. I agree. And I keep that investable asset on my BitBox. Well, BitBox is, plural, actually. I am a multisig fan, what can I say? The BitBox O2 hardware wallet is how you do safe, secure cold storage, baby. It is born in the Swiss Alps, where they really know what cold means. With Swiss-grade security engineering and that sweet spot of design where it's both secure but also, like, really intuitive to use. And, you know, that's not a simple task. Like, I really do kind of have to hand it to them. You know, usually easy to use means shite security or just totally centralized. The BitBox knows what to prioritize and simplify. And it's just, it's a sleek little design. It plugs right into your Android with, like, USB-C. It takes a few minutes to set up, and you're ready to go. You're holding your own keys, and you're ready to be Bitcoin sovereign. You need a safe, simple hardware wallet. You get 5% off your BitBox with code GUY, G-U-Y. You can go straight there and get the Bitcoin-only version at the link that I have set up for you, guyswan.com/BitBox. Again, that is guyswan.com/BitBox, and get yourself a digital vault for your digital keys. All right. Let's get back into Lynn Alden's May 1st follow-up to her first post on Luna. Quote, Luna note. Back in my April 3rd premium report, I discussed the programming of Terra USD or UST and shared a number of concerns. As an update a month later, the market cap of UST increased while the market cap of Luna decreased. So the collateralization is getting worse. This is not collateralization the same way as DAI is. It's an algorithmic stablecoin rather than a crypto-collateralized stablecoin. However, the market value of Luna is an important variable in the long-term integrity of UST. Their reserve holdings of Bitcoin and AVAX add less than 10% to their total collateralization. So even factoring those reserve assets in, the ratio has been weakening somewhat. Meanwhile, the Anchor Reserve that funds the artificially high yields on UST decreased by 40% in April. This decline represents too many depositors earning a high yield. Eventually, the founders will either need to inject more capital into it, which they did before, or they'll have to let yields settle to a market rate, which would likely reduce demand for UST. We're at a stage where it's worth paying attention to Terra's UST peg pretty closely in the months ahead. As Luna has dropped in value, the amount of collateralization that Luna provides in order to algorithmically support the UST peg has diminished. This could be salvaged for a period of time by a broad crypto rally, but either way, I'll keep an eye on it here. Meanwhile, the direction of their reserves continues to diminish. The worst-case scenario is that UST starts to depeg, and the Luna Defense Guard is forced to sell some or all of their $1.6 billion Bitcoin stack into an already weak market in order to defend that UST peg. I think the way it would work is that UST holders would be able to exchange for Bitcoin, at which point many of them would choose to liquidate their position and get back to cash. The Terra network would be severely impaired by that point, and Bitcoin would likely take a noticeable price hit. I would be a buyer of Bitcoin in such a capitulation, but it would likely be messy if or when it occurs. That could potentially even mark the bottom of this cycle, with a lot of forced liquidations, similar to quarter four of 2018 or quarter one of 2020. I'm not saying it will certainly happen this cycle, but it's enough of a risk that I'm watching it somewhat regularly now. Overall, the only investable asset I see across the digital asset ecosystem is Bitcoin. But even that is best paired with some cash for rebalancing and volatility reduction in this challenging macro environment. Everything else in the industry is something I categorize as a speculation whenever I analyze it at best, or basically a Ponzi scheme at worst, depending on the specific asset in question. As a result, most of my DeFi and NFT reporting ends up like this. Seems like every time we meet, I got nothing but bad news. Lynn Alden, May 1st, 2022. Although I was increasingly concerned about it happening, I would not have guessed that Terra would collapse just a week after that second report. These sorts of things can last quite a while if they are backed by a lot of big money funds like Terra was, so I didn't know when or how it would fail specifically. They didn't even have time to get their automated Bitcoin redemption mechanism set up, and so the Luna Foundation Guard was manually and centrally lending their Bitcoin reserves to market makers to try to defend the failing Terra USD peg. The Luna Foundation Guard's Bitcoin multi-signature address was drained, and big inputs showed up on exchanges. It's currently unclear what the full chain of custody for their Bitcoin was, but the blockchain analytics firm Elliptic tracked it going to Binance and Gemini. Evidence suggests that it was a well-funded attack that affected the timing of the Terra Luna unravel. A large entity apparently sold Bitcoin short and went after the Terra USD peg, right along the lines of how people described that the protocol could be attacked back in 2021. For macro investors, think of it like George Soros going after the Bank of England. Blaming the attacker misses the point. If something in markets can be successfully attacked, it eventually will be successfully attacked. Algorithmic stablecoins have had a bad track record of failure, and this was the biggest one yet. Since most of their adjustment mechanism was public knowledge, an attacker could know all the specific ways in which to strike it. contagion from the collapse of Terra began spreading throughout the digital asset ecosystem. Many VCs had exposure to Luna coins. Thousands of altcoins began to bleed out. Various pools of capital were frightened out of the space. It's a period of broad reevaluation across the ecosystem to separate the wheat from the chaff. Most of it is chaff. Bitcoin itself continues to function with no permanent impairment other than a price hit, while the Terra ecosystem received a kill shot, and the broad cryptocurrency industry is somewhat maimed from a regulatory, reputational, and liquidity standpoint. Summary thoughts. I remain structurally bullish on Bitcoin as part of a portfolio, especially with reoccurring purchases over time to take advantage of the volatility. Although there are risks to the view, I think this year, 2022, will be looked back on as a good time for accumulation for investors with a 3 to 5 year time horizon, similar to the year 2020, year 2018, and the year 2015 capitulations. While there are other neat blockchains out there, there are none that I have personally found to be investable with a decent risk-reward ratio. Investors should use considerable caution when speculating on any crypto token outside of Bitcoin, if they do so at all. Even for Bitcoin, investors must maintain appropriate position sizes relative to their tolerance for volatility and assessment of its network risks. I view the ongoing monetization of Bitcoin similar to a bodybuilder's bulking and cutting cycle. Bodybuilders often focus on revolving cycles of mass creation followed by fat reduction, so that after numerous cycles they accumulate a lot of muscle while avoiding fat accumulation. During bull markets, Bitcoin goes up in price but faces dilution from thousands of new projects, like building muscle and fat at the same time as part of the mass creation cycle. When liquidity is flowing, anyone with an idea can get funding and can pull investors in with promising narratives. Outside capital flows into Bitcoin and then it begins getting distracted by these shiny new objects and begins diluting into all these other things. And then during the bear markets, liquidity flows out. Bitcoin takes a price hit, but the thousands of altcoins take a much bigger price hit. Excessive debt is destroyed, pegs are broken, Ponzi schemes are laid bare, and weak networks are ripped apart. Crypto muscle growth comes to a halt and even shrinks some. But importantly, large swaths of unproductive crypto fat is burned away so that the next growth cycle can begin anew. When each new cycle comes, Bitcoin's network effect and investment thesis have historically remained intact, while most other projects become stagnant and discarded by developers and investors. Bitcoin has gone on to make higher highs in 4 separate major cycles, with greater levels of adoption and development each time, while the majority of altcoins only go through 1 or 2 cycles before rolling over for good. Even many of the most notable coins eventually stagnate. If we look at the top 10 coins near the end of the 2017 bull market, for example, every single one of them went on to underperform Bitcoin from those highs in the subsequent bear market and bull market. ETH, BCH, XRP, LTC, ADA, IOTA, Dash, NIM, and XMR all reached lower highs as denominated in Bitcoin during the 2021 bull run compared to the 2017 bull run. The same is basically true if we look back to the 2013 bull run as well. People today haven't even heard of most of these top 10 coins by now. Of this list, only XRP went on to make higher highs in 2017 as denominated in Bitcoin compared to 2013, but then it failed to do so in the 2021 cycle. None of the others even managed one more cycle of bigger Bitcoin-denominated gains. I think this pattern will continue. There's a high probability that most of the crypto darlings of the 2021 bull run have already seen their all-time highs as denominated in Bitcoin. Maybe one or two will go on to get a higher high at some point, but most will not. That doesn't mean that Bitcoin is without risks, but it has by far the best track record in the space and is the one designed with a specific purpose in mind. Block after block, it continues to operate as intended over time. All right, that concludes the postmortem digital alchemy, the postmortem of the crypto crash by Lynn Alden. So since I told you I didn't have time for the commentary today, but I am just going to shill the fact that Shitcoin Insider is coming back. We haven't done an episode in I don't even know how long, but we are getting Corey Clipston mentioned in this article. Corey Clipston is coming on, and we are going to talk all about this and go into the Terra Luna situation and whether it was attacked and why it should have been obvious that this was going to be a disaster, and just talk about crypto in general. It is going to be a hell of a fun discussion, I think. Corey has been going to town on this one, and luckily, and maybe it wasn't many people, but he definitely saved some people from getting absolutely wiped out in this. It really just was a shit show. It's pretty incredible what happened. If you look at these charts, I don't know if you've looked at them recently, but Lynn has the images here of just the chart. I mean, it's just this climb, and then it hiccups for a second, and then it's just gone. Just gone. Luna goes to zero. Terra USD just goes to zero. Just absolutely crazy how much supposed value was obliterated in a matter of hours. And this is what you get. This is what these things produce over and over again. The idea of an algorithmic stablecoin, of something that a completely unbacked thing, backed by a completely unbacked thing that had a monetary policy of deflation and algorithmic deflation and inflation with incentivized liquidity, where liquidity could just dry up, and in an effort to get rid of it, you would literally print Luna. I don't want to go too far into it, but just the idea was absurd. It just was crazy. You can't back something that is supposed to be like a government current, like a national currency peg, with something that's just a speculative shitcoin, and it's not valuable because you can trade it for something that is pegged to fiat that is not backed by anything but the thing that pegs it to fiat. It blows my mind. I get that, maybe people are trying to be creative, but this is not really a new thing. We've had these supposed algorithmic stable coins before, and they all have massive problems. It's remarkable how often, and I hear this, it's like everything comes back over and over and over again. We get the same scams, we get the same Ponzi's, we get the same attempts at the same projects and solve the same problem. We get a file sharing, decentralized file coin, or Dropbox coin or whatever every cycle. We get three of them every cycle. We get algorithmic stable coins every cycle. They rehash all of the same talking points, all the same bullshit FUD from 2017 and 2016 on Bitcoin. Then all the same stuff that came from 2013, 12, and 14. I mean, just, it's all rehashed over and over again, and the cycle just keeps going. And I hear this stuff. People still are talking about, we're 2 years out from another halving. I guarantee you, absolutely 100% guarantee you, a crap ton of crypto people are going to be talking about the mining death spiral again. We're going to go through it all again. I know it because we've done it three times, and it always happens. Nobody's going to hear anything about Craig Wright for a year, and then he's going to come out and be talking about how Bitcoin is going into a death spiral because it doesn't have enough transactions or whatever, blocks aren't big enough. And Roger Ver just came out of the woodwork. Roger Ver's back, talking about how Bitcoin can't scale and Bitcoin's too expensive and can't be used for payments. I've bought so much Bitcoin now, just posting little videos of me making lightning transactions to all these idiots because all this FUD has come back. It's remarkable to watch this happen over and over and over again. And these people think it's new. They think they're sharing something new. It's like you're a decade late on all of your FUD, literally a decade. And you're trying the same project that was done 10 times already and failed 10 times already. And this time you're just doing it with more VCs and more unfortunate boobs who are just throwing money at you, and more VC fiat debt-backed nonsense, and it's just going to blow up again. It's remarkable. It is truly remarkable to feel like you're watching the same story over and over and over again with new people every time. Actually, you know, not even new people. Somehow I'm seeing like the same people come back and do the same thing again. And I guess it's like if they ended up making a boatload of money, even if their project, even if their shitcoin failed, it's like, okay, well, we'll just do another shit. I mean, it worked technically for them. Whew. Anyway, I'm doing my shitcoin insider episode by myself, and I don't even have Corey and our insider with us. So don't forget to, if you're not subscribed to Bitcoin Audible or the Shitcoin Insider, like I said, I know it's been forever. We've had so many ideas and we've talked about episodes for Shitcoin Insider that just never happened. I still actually want to get back to some of those episodes because there's just some fun crap in crypto to dig into. But this one's too good. We couldn't let this one go. This is a huge blow up in the crypto ecosystem, and I really want to pick Corey's brain and about everything that's going on and kind of the state of DeFi and everything right now too. So don't forget to subscribe to Shitcoin Insider. I hope that will land this week. Everything's still a little bit dependent on the baby. So whenever he gets here, you know, it might delay some things and change some schedules. But like I said, I'm trying to have episodes for you guys. I'm trying to get stuff done, and I'm still hitting a chapter on 2 audiobooks. And Knut, if you listen to this, I'm going to send you a message. I can taste the end of it. My voice is just wearing out on me at the end of the day. And I'm trying to get caught up on a whole bunch of stuff, but, his audiobook, Everything There Is Divided by 21 Million. Oof. I can taste the end, like the light at the end of the tunnel. I am basking in it right now. I'm so close. So, stay tuned for that, and some other great audiobooks on the way. I'm trying to get as much done as possible. You may be able to hear my voice is a little bit exhausted right now. But yes, we will close this. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed Lynn Alden's amazing piece. Lynn always is killing it. She has amazing analysis. Love her newsletter. I actually kind of intend to go back and read the What Is Money Anyway on this show. It's really good if you haven't. In fact, I will link to that one as well if you do want to explore some of the other stuff she's written. It's very hard to keep up with. She's a machine. She puts a lot of stuff out. But unfortunately, I'm so behind on all the other reads that I really want to tackle that I don't know when that one is going to make it into the mix. But it has remained near the top of my list, so hopefully I'll get to it. I need to update the vote page, so if you guys want to hear it, let me know and throw some sats on it on bitcoinaudible.com/vote. Anyway, let's close it out. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you so much to our sponsors that make this show happen. The Bitbox hardware wallet, Swan Bitcoin, the best way to stack Bitcoin only. Stay away from all this crap. Please don't stack UST. Just stack Bitcoin with Swan. It's swanbitcoin.com/guy. We'll get you, it's my referral. And of course, the Fold card. Get sats back on everything in your life with Fold. Some serious discounts for you. You can go to guyswan.com/sponsors. And I've got the links and details and discount codes, all that good stuff. All right. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you are enjoying our bear market. The signal is getting stronger and the noise is fading into the background. And I love it. Bear markets are where Bitcoiners are built. And it's where we build Bitcoin. I'm excited. Things are happening. I've got a really freaking bullish episode for you very soon. And with that, catch you on the next one. Until then, guys, take it easy. You have been listening to Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.